Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Kevin Zaw. Kevin is a solution engineer with Oracle for Oracle Commerce and CPQ Technologies. Kevin has a long and experienced track record working in the enterprise CPQ or configure price quote space, and we had a fantastic conversation about CPQ, B2B, e-commerce, and where this entire industry is headed and why CPQ is integral to many B2B transactions and how brands can bring a cutting-edge CPQ experience to their e-commerce function. Enjoy. Welcome to B2B Commerce Corner. Commerce Corner is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast discussing all things B2B commerce through the lens of agencies, consultants, merchants, and more. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Kevin Zaw from Oracle to the podcast. Welcome, Kevin.
Yeah, I appreciate being on here. I mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, but it's so fun like having to listen to this for a couple of weeks now, a couple of months now, when I first started met you. Now to be on this, it's great.
May, and I've been following you. I actually was put on to you by somebody. I had written a post about B2B e-commerce and CPQ, and somebody tagged you in the comments and said, you need to follow Kevin. He's like the CPQ master. He like knows everything about CPQ. And so that's when I started following you. And then after a while of following you and seeing some content that you'd put out, then I thought, man, I really need to have Kevin on the podcast, because so much of what we talk about in the B2B world is CPQ related. Or I should say that in many B2B use cases, we need CPQ functionality. And so I was like, man, I really need to get somebody on who knows this CPQ thing inside and out even better than I do. And so here we are. So I'm super thrilled to have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would also say that's my brand as well. I came from the CPQ world and went to the B2B commerce space. And I think there's so much synergy around what CPQ does with B2B commerce. So yeah, I would consider that to be my brand.
Love it. And man, that brand has really stuck, because after I had that recommendation, then I had a couple more that came out of the woodwork. In fact, I think a couple of people even DM'd me and said, you should get Kevin on because he's like the CPQ guy. And I know you're talking a lot about B2B e-commerce, and you really can't talk about B2B e-commerce without mentioning CPQs. I am really excited to have you on. And you cut your teeth at Salesforce, right? That's where you got into this tech space to begin with. And even more specifically, the CPQ space was at Salesforce, right?
When I started my career, I actually wanted to become a Salesforce administrator. And then I spent a good amount of time learning the Salesforce platform. And I had my first job at Salesforce, the company. When I joined their professional service department, we had to choose what product we're going to specialize in. And during that time, I didn't really care if it was CPQ or which product it was, but I felt like I already had a good understanding of the Salesforce platform. So I just wanted to learn one of the niche products that Salesforce offered. And at the time, I was assigned CPQ, and I was nervous. A lot of people used to say that CPQ is one of the most valuable, but also one of the most challenging products to learn. But after I learned CPQ and focused on that for 3 years, I remember I kept thinking, like, when you specialize in any sort of niche, you always get a little worried what happens if that skill is not as valuable anymore, or it may be deprecated one day. So during that time, I was looking at a lot of products that were adjacent to CPQ, such as billing, or at the time Experience Cloud, which is the customer service portal, or commerce. And I was thinking, okay, there's so many different CPQ experts. Like, I want to be the person where I can say, hey, I'm the CPQ expert alongside this other product, and I can speak to how those products are interconnected. Then I started to learn about B2B commerce at Salesforce, and it started making a lot of conversation with other commerce experts. And I found a role specifically focused on B2B commerce. And what was really nice was that I felt like at the time when I was starting out my role, there weren't a lot of CPQ or B2B commerce experts. For the most part, I felt like there were very siloed applications. And when a lot of customers started to want to have those conversations where they spoke about how those products were interconnected, I felt like I was brought into a lot of different conversations. Oh, how do these applications work together? I found that to be a really valuable brand, and really valuable in having those type of conversations on how customers can use it interchangeably.
And I love that concept of skill stacking and through adjacencies and helping to understand, okay, cool. I understand CPQ. Cool. I need to understand commerce. I need to understand payments. I need to understand order management workflows. I need to understand all this stuff that is related, very tightly related to CPQ. And you've obviously parlayed that into a full-blown CPQ focused career, now also at Oracle. We don't need to go into specifics of your roles at each place. That's not really that important, I don't think. But I think what is important here is a combination of skills stacking, deep focus, niche specialization that has quite an intense value when you go into an engagement. But how, when you first started out, you had never, at least as far as I can tell from your background, and correct me if I'm wrong, you never worked inside of a B2B brand, a B2B business before. So you hadn't really been exposed to necessarily all of the different use cases, all of the business functions, all of the order workflows, all of the business processes associated with B2B commerce. Because you hadn't worked inside of a brand before, it was almost a case, at least it looks like from the outside, a case of learning on the job, learning on the fly, learning via your customers' businesses, digging in deep, doing discovery with your customers' businesses, understanding what B2B operations looks like. And so I guess a trial by fire, in a way, is being dropped in the deep end, right?
Sure. I would agree with that. I think it's always valuable to have the very type of experiences when it comes to working in a customer organization that would use B2B commerce, as well as working from the software side. But I would say there's a lot of value in some of the experience I've had when it comes to talking with different customers, hearing about what they're looking for, and all the other applications, not only commerce, but also what customers are looking for from the supply management side, how they want their order management solution to look like, as well as the customer service agents. I've been learning a lot meeting with different types of customers and hearing what they want from the software vendor side.
And how often did you find yourself, or do you find yourself, in a scenario where, because obviously you're working for a lot of suite-based vendors. When we look at these platforms, a lot of them have moved in the direction of suite-based technology, to where you buy these individual models, modules, as you need them within your business. And as you expand your need for functionality, they can say, okay, cool, you need this module, you need this module, you need this module. And even at Oracle, after they acquired NetSuite, obviously NetSuite being a suite-based platform, almost all of these suite-based, what I would say, business management technology platforms, they it feels like either they offer a CPQ platform or CPQ module, or they're definitely heading in that direction with some of their order management stuff. And so I'm wondering, how often do you find a scenario where a customer might come to you and say, hey, look, we love your CPQ platform. We don't run, say, for example, Salesforce. We don't run the whole stack. We don't run Financial Force. We don't run the CRM, but we would love to explore using your CPQ technology because we think that would be a fantastic fit for, I don't know, maybe they're running Magento or they're running some other commerce platform, but they don't have a CPQ module, but within that suite of technology. So they come to you and they say, hey, could we adopt and integrate your standalone CPQ module in with the rest of our stack, even if it's not, for example, full Salesforce, top to bottom?
Yeah, I've been part of a good amount of conversations where customers look for individual products. But I would say when customers are investing in the holistic platform or multiple solutions under one vendor, that's when they provide the most value. I think it's always a challenge whenever a customer says, I only want this one product from Oracle or Salesforce, and they're not investing in the whole suite. Because if it's a one-to-one thing, a lot of these applications do very similar functions and you're not differentiating as much. I think the differentiating comes from when you're investing in that holistic suite. So yeah, I think when those conversations become a lot more valuable when customers are not only for one solution, but a whole platform type of conversation.
And what do you think, has the world, since you've been in this space, and have you seen the understanding and the appreciation and the need for CPQ technology? Have you seen that increase in the time you've been working in the space?
I would say so. I think that a lot of customers are moving away from using Excel or some sort of like handwritten type of function when it comes to using CPQ, and they find the value of keeping everything on the cloud or be able to have more of a process of managing their quoting solution. I think what the evolution of CPQ has been, maybe I'm a little biased because I've been so focused on CPQ with commerce. The evolution from my perspective has been, not only do we want our CPQ solution to be managed from what it's typically used for with a coding solution for a sales rep, but we want that same guided selling type experience for our own customers, or the same configuration be extended for our customers when they're on a B2B commerce type experience. So I've definitely seen CPQ be more adopted and more conversation around it, but as well as be extended so that it's used for more use cases outside of just a sales rep using it as a tool for them.
For me, my first exposure to like serious CPQ technology was via the commerce stack, like the e-commerce stack. And so for me, that was the vector about how I had to learn about it, how I had to learn to solution on top of it and solution it into a more complete front-end customer-facing commerce stack. And so I guess I came at it, I guess, a little bit late to the game, because CPQ has been around a long time as a back office solution for sales reps to make sure that they're quoting the right price for the right product for the right customer, and ultimately coming up with the right solution for the customer's needs and application. And so for you, how do you, when you think of CPQ, yes, it stands for configure price quote, but if you were to put your own definition on it based on your exposure to the space for so many years, like how would you define CPQ, like a modern CPQ? How do you define that?
That's a good question. I would say that if the CPQ solution is able to have the flexibility to be able to handle the customer's need, as well as be able to handle the complexity of pricing, I feel like that's where, and it's also extensible amongst different applications, I feel like that's where customers find a lot of value. One of the challenges customers have is that if they're using a CPQ solution that's not extensible to their other applications, that can be a point of frustration. So for example, like, again, when I was primarily a CPQ consultant learning about commerce for the first time, or thinking about how CPQs do commerce, a lot of times customers would build some sort of configuration for the products that they would want to extend on the commerce type of platform. And it would be frustrating when they're able to do that. So that's when I started seeing the demand for having the extensibility for a configuration solution to a front-facing portal, or essentially where customers are able to leverage that same guided selling experience.
And I think if we wanted to use an analog in the B2C and D2C world, just to maybe help the people listening to this who maybe haven't been exposed to CPQ or haven't had a need for CPQ before, but maybe are going to have that need in their new roles or in their B2B business that are, they're starting e-commerce for the first time. And so they're probably going to need a customer-facing CPQ platform. If we look at the B2C and D2C world, most of those products tend to be quite a bit simpler in configuration to be able to identify which SKU or SKUs you're adding to the shopping cart than in the B2B world. And that's why CPQ is so critical in the B2B world. However, in the B2C world, if I'm on a product page for, I don't know, it's a t-shirt and it's got 5 different colors, 5 different sizes and 5 different designs, then we have 15 potential combinations to arrive at 15 different SKUs, right? And so when we think about that through the lens of CPQ and we try to draw an analogy between those two things, I like to use one of the more complex industries that I've worked in, which is telecommunications, right? And so whether we're talking the B2C world or the B2B world, when I go online, if I want to buy a cell phone, if I want to buy a data service, if I want to buy terrestrial DSL, if I want to do these things in the telecommunications space, usually I'm going to have to go through quite a lengthy configuration process. I'm going to say, okay, is this going to, am I going to buy the handset outright? Is it going to be subsidized? Is it going to be financed? Is it going to be financed over 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 5 years? Is it going to be part of a bundle? Am I going to get a certain amount of data with it? Am I going to get a certain amount of minutes with it? Am I going to combine it with a home data package? Am I going to combine it with an office data package? Am I going to have it for a team? Am I going to have it for one person? When we think about the verticals in the B2B space that have really complex requirements in terms of not just the amount of options that are available, but trying to create a super streamlined customer journey to present all those options in a really straightforward way that says, okay, we've got this bundle, we got this bundle, we got this bundle, but ultimately that could drop out into a matrix. And I've seen this before, of literally potentially a million different SKU combinations. And that some of those SKUs can be for services, some of those can be for products, some of those can be for data. There are a huge amount of permutations in the telecommunication space around this. And so I guess if you were to think through your experiences, are there specific verticals that benefit more or less from a proper CPQ platform instead of just trying to come up with these fixed bundles that then drop out into what we would call a BOM, a bill of materials to be able to service. So that's how I see most B2B businesses. They start out before they have a proper CPQ platform. They come up with these specific fixed bundles that are all you could think of them more like a kit or a bundle. And they've got like a fixed number of inclusions with them. And ultimately, when that order comes into the ERP, it's recognized. Maybe it has a virtual SKU that represents the full kit. And then that virtual SKU breaks down into a series of SKUs in the ERP based on that bill of materials to fulfill that virtual SKU. And that's how I see most B2B businesses dipping their toes into the water of these kits or these bundles and these configurable options. They build them out as BOMs, right? And they're fixed sets of products. But then when they want to get more complex, or if their vertical just by definition is more complex, and they want to bring more flexibility to how the customer configures exactly what they want to buy, then that's when I see them evolve from this fixed BOM mentality into this CPQ mentality, where it says, we want to open this up to where the customer has all the options that we have available.
Right. Yeah. And When I was consulting with customers on CPQ, typically customers show me what they built out as like a light CPQ solution that their team built out. And typically it would be like this, they would write out every single permutation that their business could handle. It would be like millions of different product SKUs, thousands of different product SKUs. And typically the value of CPQ is being able to reduce those product SKUs in a way that's manageable for the sales reps to be able to go through and give them more of a guided selling experience. And I think having all those different permutations being written out creates a lot of technical debt and it's difficult to manage. So a big value of CPQ is definitely being able to condense all that different types of products, so it's easier for the business to be able to report on.
And do you also see a scenario where, and I've seen this specifically in the telecom space, but it does happen in other verticals as well, to where when the order is generated on the front end after going through, say, a guided selling experience, as you term it, and that's really what it is, right? When the customer comes to the front end, they're not thinking, oh, I need a CPQ. What they're going is, I have a specific thing I want to achieve when I make this purchase. I'm trying to achieve an outcome. I'm trying to get a package of goods and services that do what I need it to do. And really what they're thinking is, how can I make sure and have confidence that I'm buying the right thing for my application, and I'm buying the right product, I'm getting the best price I can get on it, I'm maybe getting the maximum value bundle that I can get here, where I'm combining all the things together that I'm really going to likely need. And it even comes down to, you know, when this was a personal purchase, it could easily translate into a broader business purchase. I was trying to set up a mesh network. I was living rurally at the time. We wanted to set up a mesh network around a large rural property, ultimately fed by Starlink, but then we needed to feed that connection around the rural property through a mesh network. And when I went to the product pages of these different solutions from different mesh networks, I had to do a ton of research. I had to do an absolute crap ton of research. I had to go and watch YouTube videos. I had to look at product reviews. I had to basically figure out what combination of components from which brands and manufacturers and models of those products that I could put together to build this mesh network to achieve what I wanted to achieve. Now, if that brand, if that seller, and they were an online electronics retailer, had a really good CPQ platform, they could have probably asked me a whole series of questions, a series of defining questions that then could have dropped out with a package that would have exactly met my needs without me having to do a million. I spent literally probably a week doing homework on the components that I would need to build out this mesh network to cover the property appropriately, and that would be easy enough for a non-professional to install and configure and set up and get running. And I think I wanted to use that as an example to where, in the right CPQ mediated environment, someone is able to be able to effectively put in the scenario that they're trying to build around and buy components for, buy items for, and be walked through this guided selling process to where that whole research piece, or having to call up and say, this is what I want to do, can you help me put together the right package? It is able to surface this institutional knowledge within that business in a meaningful way at scale, using technology to be able to do that without having to have constant human intervention. And so would that be your experience too, that sometimes CPQ is used in really complex product and selling and buying cycle environments? That's been my experience mostly.
Yeah, exactly. When I was a CP consultant, I worked with another customer that had a very similar story. They were a software vendor and they wanted to make sure that their sales rep were selling the most optimal bundlers for their customers. So I worked with them to set up a kind of a questionnaire where you have a series of questions the sales rep would ask the customer. Depending on how the sales rep answered those questions, they would receive like a package of what they should be recommending to the customer based off of those different inputs. And another thing they set up was making sure they had validations on those different selections. So as the sales rep was so saying, okay, based off what you're telling me, we're going to recommend this product for you. And we want to make sure that you have a subscription that's going to be monthly or yearly. One of the things they found was that maybe the sales rep was trying to sell them in very odd intervals, right? And they want to create a validation saying that you can't set those types of odd intervals. Or maybe there's certain product suites that don't go together. So for example, when we're selling you this software, we're going to sell you the gold package or the platinum package. And they found that there was a lot of mistakes because sales rep can't sell both of those at the same time, right? And it's just one or the other. So I would say the value of a good CPQ solution is making sure that your sales reps are selling optimally, right? They're selling the best product for the customers, as well as not making mistakes, because there's a cost of making a mistake when you're selling complex products to the customer. The customer becomes unhappy because they're like, hey, this person I work with maybe oversold me, or the products that they sold me don't work together. But ultimately, it maintains customer satisfaction or increases customer satisfaction because there aren't mistakes when you're quoting the customer.
And how important is good baseline product data and attributes in a CPQ environment? Like how, because when I go in to consult with a lot of B2B brands, their product data is in quite a state. Sometimes their data is spread all over the industry. It's spread all over the business. Some of it's in the sales reps' heads. Some of it is in printed catalogs. Some of it's in PDFs. Some of it's in CSVs. The data can be around products can be spread all over the business, and it can be concentrated in certain hands, right? And that can become the UVP of that specific salesperson. They're the ones that know everything about this product. And so every inquiry that comes in goes to this sales rep as a result, right? And so how important is it to start getting this institutional knowledge out of people's heads and out of all these nooks and crannies in the business and getting it into a format that then can be consumed by the likes of a CPQ platform to make sure that we do have all the attributes and information at our disposal to be able to create those decision trees throughout the CPQ generation process? And do you find that some of these brands need to implement something like a PIM first? So let's say they only have an ERP, but they don't have a PIM. And so they don't necessarily have all the attributes in a structured way that makes sense in digital systems. It needs to make sense in digital systems to be able to drive the really granular decision-making processes in the CPQ itself. And so how often was it a case of needing to consult on product data and making sure that's high quality, consistent, fully attributed before someone can embark on a really good CPQ implementation? Hey team, have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
I remember when I was a CB consultant, I would say that was one of the first conversations we had with them, telling customers that the first step of implementing CPQ solutions, making sure all your product data was in a centralized place, it was updated, and making sure your product data, I would say, is the most important part of the implementation. Because once you set up all your product data, then you can start creating little rules around it. Then you can support yourselves in filtering what products make sense for what scenario of being sold at. And it also, I will say, it takes the most amount of time when it comes to implementing a CPQ solution, right? Making sure your product data is all like together.
That aligns with almost any kind of front-end customer-facing digital solution in my experience. Like when I go in and customers are like, yep, hey, we're bought into this idea of e-commerce. We know we need to offer it. We don't offer it today. Maybe we offer EDI for our biggest customers, but we don't offer self-service e-commerce for any medium, small and medium-sized customers. And so we know we need to do that. We know we need to get away from an over-reliance on field sales reps. But when they might be all ready to go. They might even have a budget allocated for the project. But sometimes we have to take two steps backward or five steps backward to take one step forward and get that product data in a place where it makes sense in those digital channels. And it can be serviced and surfaced consistently through those digital channels to where it makes sense to the buyer on the front end. So this really aligns with what I'm seeing is that I would say greater than 90% of instances when I am brought in to consult and say that a customer might bring me in and say, hey, look, we're ready to scope our new e-commerce solution. We're ready to make a search and select process for the platform and partner, and we're ready to go, right? We just want you to help us scope the solution and architect the solution, and then we'll find partners to do the implementation. And sometimes I see a level of frustration on the customer side because they're raring to go. They want to be live in 4 months, or they want to be live in 6 months. So they have these ambitions of at least standing up a basic MVP e-commerce platform in literally months' time. Once they've made the decision, they want it to happen yesterday, right? And that makes sense. I understand that. And so I really have empathy for, and I sense the frustration on the customer side, on the merchant side, when we say, hang on a second, let's take a look at your product data. Let's take a look at your customer data. Let's make sure that all the pricing, customer specific pricing is correct, that either you've got your tiers all set up correctly, or you've got the price list per customer all set up correctly. And this leads, we not only have the massive product data challenge when it comes to CPQ, because the data needs to be really good and really consistent and really broad-based. We need to have good, deep product data on every single product we have so that we can integrate that into a guided selling process. But secondarily, you must see the exact same problems with customer data as it relates to CPQ as I see as it relates to every other customer-facing solution. Because obviously, when you're going down a guided selling experience in the B2B world, most customers will have different pricing. Once it drops down to a SKU-level bundle, for example, they will have unique pricing that is unique to them. And so that also has to be structured in a way that the CPQ system can understand to make sure that we're quoting the right price to the right customer on the right package of products, right?
Yep. Yeah, and I think it was nice from my experience focused on CPQ and B2B commerce. I feel like a lot of these conversations are very similar to each other, right? If I talk to a customer about what type of pricing variations that they expect on their commerce site to appear, right? That same type of question applies for a CPQ solution. If there's any variation between the product that they're expected to sell in a commerce solution, right? That same conversation comes into a CPQ solution. Whenever a customer is looking for a B2B commerce solution as well as CPQ solution, it's really nice to be able to ask those same type of questions in one conversation and have it apply to both. I think back then I felt like a lot of the B2B commerce and CPQ, they were very siloed applications, but now I think focusing on both allows me to have these same type of conversations with both type of use cases.
And how do you help them, or do you sometimes need to help them? Because sometimes what I find is that a lot of these brands that have been doing things the same way for a very long period of time, they can actually streamline their data sets in ways that maybe they don't even think about doing. So, for example, if we find that customers in certain bands that are doing a certain amount of purchasing a year, whether that be unit purchases or revenue, whatever it might be, or number of categories that they buy through, whatever it is, if there's some consistency there, then oftentimes what I find is we can put them into bands, because we find that in theory, they say all of our customers have 100% unique price list. But when we do an audit of the way that their pricing is structured, we find that maybe we could put 90% of pricing into four different bands based on some certain criteria of buckets or segments that their customers fall into. We can automatically streamline their pricing quite substantially and move them off of bespoke price lists per customer to bands with perhaps the odd exception based on a quote basis, a quote request basis, right? And so what we find is, and that what I find is that if we can do that, then that helps the brand to do a lot better forecasting of any wholesale pricing model changes that they would make in a certain tier or whatever. It allows them to do better forecasting of what that's going to do in terms of the scalability of what they're going to be able to do as a manufacturer or as a distributor and on the buy side, so that they can then extend those discounts perhaps to their customers, and allows them to do some forward planning in a much more harmonized way with much more accurate predictions around what their revenue models are going to do, what their buying models are going to do. I just find that business, B2B businesses, in some instances, have gotten unnecessarily complex organically just because they just evolved over time. And because there was no boundaries put on the negotiations that a sales rep could have with their account, for example, that they just said, yep, you can come up with custom pricing for every single SKU in the catalog for every single customer as appropriate. You can negotiate that on a customer by customer basis. Because there was no boundaries put around that, because they never had the thought that they were ever going to do anything with e-commerce when these models were created and these business processes were created, I find that because those pricing models grew organically through evolving relationships over the years, that they don't even realize, they've never done an audit of their product data. They've never done a wholesale audit of their customer data. And so they can actually radically simplify their business in many cases in ways that they don't even think about, because they've never had to think about that, because they've never thought about the consequences of their current processes and models on digital channels.
Yeah. I that was a conversation I had pretty often when I was a CB consultant, which is to help companies design like a process of being able to control discounts that their sales would ever give, control pricing, making sure that the sales were not going over a particular discount if they were working with a particular customer, also creating different approval processes. So if the sales rep were to go above a certain discount, who would they need to reach out to? Would they reach out to their manager? Would it go to the VP? If that was the case, how would they be notified? How quickly can we have that process so the sales rep can still go through the proper channels, but also make it quick to be able to get a response? So it's a very common use case when it comes to using a CPQ solution, making sure that you have certain controls over pricing.
Yeah, and I ran into a situation recently where we were not able to help. This one brand was looking at they were 100% analog business. They had sales reps, they had engineers. They're in the packaging industry. They make bespoke packaging for very high value, very sensitive items. So it might be, I don't know, it might be a measuring instrument. It might be a mirror that goes into a satellite, or it might be a motorcycle, or it might be components for vehicles or aircraft, or it could be anything. But they make bespoke packaging, right? And so they make bespoke crates. They make bespoke foam inserts. Basically, every single thing they make is 100% bespoke for the exact application that it's going to be used in. And so when I was talking to them, they basically said, no, like we have, and I said, do you have even a standardized questionnaire process that you start out with customers when you're doing discovery of what this potential bespoke packaging project looks like? Do you have a standard questionnaire or discovery process or form that you go through with them to capture like a minimum amount of information that then goes to the engineer for the engineer to have a conversation directly with the client to effectively scope the project out, and then maybe get to a place where there's a basic CAD drawing that gets shared and discussed and then iterated upon before the final product is then quoted and then ultimately approved and built? And they were like, no, it's 100% bespoke. Basically, we might get an email from a client. They might describe in a paragraph that, hey, this is what we're looking to have. And then pretty much from there, we get an engineer onto a call with them pretty much straight away, like as the first conversation. And then it's really just a dialogue with them. And it was such a hard thing for me to say, that's if even the process itself is 100% bespoke per client and per project, that is going to be a very difficult thing to try to structure in a consistent way to where, you know, even thinking of what a CPQ process could look like in that environment becomes really difficult because it's all bespoke. So what my advice to them was, try to bring some consistency to your current manual process first. try to create some sort of structured questionnaire that captures all the basic information that you would normally capture in a dialogue session. Try to structure that in such a way to where you're capturing that maybe in a form-based process. And if you can bring any level of consistency to what you do today into how not only you capture the information, but ultimately you get to a place where you define the quote, because they're defining the quotes in their ERP based on that dialogue that the engineer was having with the client. I said, unless you can bring consistency to that process in some way and some structure to that process in some way, it's going to be very difficult to turn that into an end-to-end digital equivalent. And have you seen that too, where you go in and basically the client was just not anywhere near ready? They thought they could perhaps turn this into a digital process, but they just weren't ready. They didn't have enough consistency in their process to be able to even get the data into a CPQ to give that to the customer.
Yeah, I remember I had that conversation, I think a year ago, with a chemical manufacturer. We were talking to them about having a configuration solution, and they said they didn't have all those processes structured yet. And essentially, if you're looking for a custom chemical to create, you'd have to first talk with the manufacturer. I think the challenge with that is that's not very scalable, right? The more orders that come in, it's not like they can have a conversation with those engineers and be able to scale that. So you have to have that structured process. And another thing I wanted to add in too is that when it comes to going through that process and being able to structure, I also think it's important to like shorten the sales cycle, right? Because when you have more of a process, and you know, if there's some parts of it that you can structurize and there's some parts more customized, right? The parts that are going to be structured, you can have more automated and just focus on the parts that are more custom. And again, that's going to shorten the cycle and be able to help you scale the more orders you have.
And did you ever have a scenario where you simply had to say, look, I don't think you're ready as a business. I don't think we can help you. And even with consulting from our side, you probably need to do more internal work yourselves, not necessarily with a consultant like us, but you need to do some internal work yourself to try to find areas where you can apply a system, but it may be hard, it may be difficult, and you may think that every single engagement needs to be bespoke to do what you do. But you, not only would you be more scalable, but you effectively would be in a position where you could productize your solution, where you could help many more customers than you help today. And you could make a much, if you want to, you could probably grow a much larger business without having to just throw bodies at it. If you were willing to turn more of your services into products, maybe put maybe a little bit more of a ring fence around how these services get delivered and priced, and maybe put a little bit more ring fencing around the final product that you're ultimately going to produce for the customer at the end. But by niching down, like I think of niching down as a superpower. That's what I've seen in industry. The businesses that can niche down and the businesses that are not trying to be all things to all people by being fully bespoke every single time they engage, that allows them to become a much more sustainable and scalable business. Sure, they might lose some business at the fringe, right? Some of those hyper bespoke things, they might lose a little bit of that opportunity, or maybe they have a completely separate workflow for anything that falls outside of that systematized process, so that maybe they have the bespoke team in-house and then they have the more, okay, this is more of our standard process team in-house. Have you ever had situations where you've had to say, look, you really need to think about your business model before you think about a CPQ?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm hesitating a little bit because I feel like most of the time customers are aware that they first need to reflect on their own business model before considering a CPQ solution. In the past, what I've typically done is show them what a CPQ solution does, a very high level demonstration of how customers use CPQ. And I think what's been really valuable from seeing that is the customer can go backwards and say, okay, this is what a CPQ solution does. This is what other customers do. Now let's reflect back on our own business process, see where we can standardize it. I think without them seeing that, sometimes it feels a little open-ended in terms of, okay, what can we really do with the new solution and be able to standardize that? So I think being able to visualize what other customers do really helps customers be able to envision what their new business models could be.
Man, I love that. That is such a great point, because I see the same situation happen in the e-commerce world and e-commerce platforms. Mm-hmm. Customers, when you're going into discovery with them, sometimes they don't know what they don't know. They don't even know what's possible. And so once you maybe do a demo of an e-commerce platform, like an advanced B2B e-commerce platform, for example, and they see what's possible, their eyes, you can do maybe an hour demo or a 90-minute demo of an e-commerce platform. And it starts off this internal thought process and dialogue, and the fireworks go off in their minds and they go, wow, we could apply this in so many areas in our business. We know we need to do a lot of work to be able to get to a place where we can support that. But man, this gives us a sense of direction. This gives us a place to begin. This gives us a place where we can have an internal dialogue. And then we always record those sessions. And so they go back and they re-review certain pieces and they go, oh yeah, we could do this here. Oh yeah, we could do this here. So I love the fact that you said that, which is that sometimes businesses just don't know what they don't know, and they don't know what's possible until they see the technology in action. And then they go, oh, this is how we could apply this technology in our business. If we make these slight tweaks to our business model, or we make slight tweaks to the way we engage with our customers, we could actually make this work in our business. So I love that what you just said, because I see it routinely as well. And I think this is true of almost all technical revolutions, right? Where a piece of technology is potentially so transformative to the business at its foundational level that until they see it in action, you can talk all you like, but there's this saying we have in the industry, and I use it a lot, which is show, don't tell. You can talk till you're blue in the face, but until you show it in action, it's hard for people to imagine what technology can do, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a value of someone in my role where I'm giving demos to customers before they're actually making a purchase. A lot of times if the customer doesn't have a solution similar to what I'm showing them, oftentimes they have all these different ideas. Okay, like we see what you're demoing to us. Now we'll try to figure out how this is going to apply to our business. It's my role to try to, but I think it's important for them to be able to visualize that new solution and then try to connect it back to, okay, based on what we see over here, this is how we can find benefit out of that.
Completely. And are you finding that, because obviously you've worked for enterprise companies primarily, and these enterprise suite-based companies where, you know, to adopt the entire suite of technology can get up there in terms of enterprise pricing. It can be hundreds of thousands of dollars a year worth of investment in these technologies, and where the businesses can really leverage those technologies from a scalability perspective and from an efficiency perspective, the ROI can be tremendous. But are you also seeing in some instances, now it's obviously hard for you to say because you work for Oracle, so I'm not expecting you to say anything against Oracle. I never would. But are you finding that sometimes that the smaller organizations that maybe can't yet, they're a piece of popcorn that hasn't fully popped yet. So they're not big enough to justify the expenditure for a Salesforce or an Oracle solution, but that they could justify, because there's some standalone configure price quote solutions out there in the marketplace that are more standalone. They're a little bit more basic. Maybe they don't have the full functionality of a Salesforce or an Oracle solution, but they're a lot less expensive. They're a lot more digestible by the business. And maybe that's a stepping stone. Maybe they start there. It's like in the B2C, D2C world. Maybe a brand starts with a Shopify solution, a really basic off the shelf, basic theme. They get up and running, but then when they hit a certain scale, maybe they need a fully custom built Shopify solution, or maybe they evolve into another platform. Are you seeing, in terms of source of business for you guys at the enterprise level, how often is it that you're seeing someone come off of, say, a starter CPQ solution, a more basic solution, and then they leverage that, they get to a certain scale, then they're ready to evolve or take that leap into a more enterprise class solution? Or is it generally people for the first time are implementing an enterprise class solution in terms of your customers that you're seeing on a pretty regular basis?
I just want to make sure I understand. So I guess the question is, have I seen use cases where customers are using maybe a smaller vendor, maybe a more or niche type of solution, to try to grow to a more enterprise type of solution?
Yeah, and would you recommend that as a stepping stone? Or would you recommend that a business grow to a certain point before they even start looking at CPQ? I guess what I'm trying to say here is, I don't want to put people off looking at CPQ technology because they think they need to go with this super high-end, really expensive CPQ solution that's going to cost them. It's an enterprise class product, so it's got an enterprise price attached to it. I feel like there is probably a stepping stone model that even smaller B2B businesses, let's say they're doing, I don't know, maybe they're only doing $5 million a year in business right now, or maybe even less. And maybe they can't easily justify an enterprise class CPQ solution today, but it doesn't mean they can't benefit from a more basic CPQ solution. So I feel like I want to give people some level of comfort in the fact that they can tiptoe the way into this, that they don't have to adopt everything in the kitchen sink to get value out of a CPQ solution.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think where I'm hesitating is that I think the answer really comes with it depends, right? Like when you start investing in certain solutions at what point in your business, I think one of the challenges with that is the amount of technical debt you might have, right? If you start investing in a CPQ solution that maybe is not as robust, but it's perfectly fine for your business right now, then that's great, right? If you can leverage that for the next 10 years, then you're getting a lot of value out of it, which is great. But if you get to a point where maybe you start outgrowing your solution after a few months and a short period of time, then the question is, hey, you spent so much time in the CPQ solution that you just outgrew very quickly. Then becomes a lot of technical debt. I think being able to forecast what your needs are currently, as well as what your needs are could be in the near future, that's very important when it comes to making these type of decisions. So yeah, I think the answer is depends. And I think it's a hard decision to make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Kevin, I think we've covered such an amazing amount of ground here. I really appreciate your time. This has been absolutely amazing. I've learned a ton from you. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate you spending the time with me today. We're now at the point of our conversation where I get to turn the microphone over to you. I get to let you ask me one question, any question you like. So Kevin Zaw, what is your question for me today?
So I heard in one of your podcasts, I don't remember exactly who it was from. I think the person previously asked you about where you saw B2B commerce going, and your response was, right now, B2B commerce is like in a 2D environment, essentially a website, but you potentially see it being in a 3D type environment. I assume it's when you're relating it back to VR and how that could potentially connect. I want to see if you could expand upon that, because that's something I think could happen with the B2B commerce space. It's hard for me to envision that, but I also see a potential future there where B2B commerce connects back with VR. So I want to see what your thoughts about that were.
Yeah, look, that's a fantastic question. And I think where this starts to make sense is in these complex product environments where product visualization, because we already have, you can have 3D imagery of products, you can have view through imagery of products already today. I think that in a full VR environment, that becomes much more immersive. So on our 2D screens, sure, you can rotate an image around. You might be able to see through it. It might be a CAD drawing, an exploded drawing. But there's nothing quite like being able to almost virtually hold it in your hands and look at it through a set of VR goggles, for example. I think that is going to be the next evolution of 3D imagery. I think being able to interact with that, being able to take, instead of looking at an exploded drawing, being able to literally pull on the sides of a product, break it open, see the components inside with a virtual overlay of the part numbers dotting each component inside that breakaway thing. I think that the VR and AR, probably to a lesser degree in some respects, AR is going to be adopted first, VR is going to be adopted later, but I think the applications for VR, particularly in the B2B product world, are going to be immense once I think it's the lack of standards. The lack of standards today, there's no standard. We've got, at least in the web world, we've got HTML, we've got CSS, we've got JavaScript, we've got some standards that everything is built to and works on all devices. And I think until we get to a place where there's some standards around VR and AR and someone comes to the fore with a leading standard that everybody can adopt, and some generic technology that is easy to adopt, like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript are today for the web, I think that it's all about the apps, it's all about the standards, and until that happens, that it's going to see limited use. We've got AR Kit, we've got all the stuff from Apple, we've got all the stuff from Google, we've got stuff from Facebook and Meta. We've got all these competing technologies right now, and it's all tied to the hardware really deeply. And I think that until we get some universal standards around this stuff, I don't think we're going to see mass adoption. It's going to remain a niche technology for the foreseeable future until we resolve the standardization issue. But once we do, I think we're then going to pretty quickly get into a scenario where it gets adopted really rapidly. Because once you have standardization, then the price can drop down. We get economies of scale, and everybody can adopt it very quickly. That's what I've seen play out with other technologies over the years.
I'm looking forward to when there's going to be a lot more conversation around how VR or AR is going to connect with B2B commerce more.
Amazing. Amazing. Kevin, this has been amazing. I will put your contact details for your LinkedIn profile, et cetera, into the show notes. That way, if anybody wants to reach out to you, have a further conversation about CPQ, they will be able to do that. And any other way other than LinkedIn, any other way you like people to reach out to you and have a conversation with you?
LinkedIn, email, both good tools.
Okay. Okay. And DM, I guess, on LinkedIn as well. Kevin, this has been an amazing conversation. I super appreciate your time. You're clearly an expert in the space, and I can't wait to speak to you again soon, my friend. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.